are we doing this?
I don't know, Sim. Tell me what the fuck we're doing.
This is exciting. We're doing a crossover. Karen and Georgia from My Favorite Murder in your house right now.
Yay. Thank you guys so much for being here. This is like the most efficient way to podcast, isn't it?
Everybody get together in one room and talk all at the same time.
Right.
I would like to describe the setting, though. We're in what we call the Mole Room, because there's this massive poster of this horrible movie called The Mole People that's from like 1946. And we call this room the Mole Room, and now it's incredibly dark and lit with candles, and we're going to talk about our favorite murder.
Yeah, welcome to our lives,
Bloody Mary. Right,
it does feel like that.
Have you guys always been attracted to like morbid things? Like,
very attracted to.
Yeah, I have.
Yeah.
For sure.
Yeah, in a creepy way.
It's a challenge, though, because I'll give you a tour later, but I have like a lot of shit around. I have a few like skulls, like a lot of taxidermy. The goal with the house was like, how can I make it look like the creepiest natural history museum where the people that come over might feel like they could get, murdered.
Dream house.
Yeah.
Yes.
This is haunted for sure. The Mole Room is haunted.
It really is, isn't it?
Absolutely. If any room's going to be haunted or any house, it's this.
I always thought like with the haunted thing, like we've talked about this on the podcast before, like how interesting it would be if somebody believed that their apartment at like the Oakwoods, like B2108 was like haunted.
Yeah.
No, that's not fucking.
But see, that's what I'm saying. Like, why do ghosts only like gravitate towards like creepy darkness, old things like
Jack
just
Warner,
like, 1982.
We were talking about big stars haunting the Oakwood.
Right.
Like they're really the biggest. It's like Betty Davis is in my half bath right now. Everybody get ready.
In the crown molding, in the cheap crown. But we were talking about that, how much creepier it is for a new build to be haunted than an old house. Because it's like, yeah, of course this place is haunted. There's like people who lived here. But if it's like a new apartment or house in normal people's cases, then it's like, well, this is a fucking... The demon.
That's
a
demon.
It's not like Gary Sherman who died at like age 78.
No.
Who just has a message like, for his wife.
Yeah, he's not a dick.
It's not nice.
He never got married though.
Oh, is that what it is?
Yeah, he was just a little lonely. He died of a heart attack. You know,
his messages, get out there. Yeah. Really mix and mingle. Try
you
to find somebody.
The Oakwood gym is like steps from your house and yet you won't go exercise. Yeah.
Don't be like me. Don't be like Gary and die alone. So sad.
Thank you guys so much for being here.
Thank you.
Well, you're pretending like it's your show.
Oh, it's not my fucking show.
Well, I'm just going to tell the listeners what we're doing first, so
Fine.
They know.
Great,
because it kind of is her show.
Yeah,
but we're just at her place. It's our show.
It's true. I get.
We're doing a full on cross. You guys are getting the full unqualified treatment, and we're going to get the full My Favorite Murder treatment.
I feel like a guest. I feel like a guest. Maybe like you host this beginning part, then we'll host.
Yes, I would love that.
Okay. We move into the room we want to be in.
Right. Which is full of dead people.
My upstairs bedroom.
Goodbye.
Things get kinky.
In the half bath.
Okay, I like that. So, Anna, you're going to host the first part. Next week, we're going to release, we're actually on the 22nd. We're releasing this on the 15th. And we're releasing, Steve, right? We're releasing the 22nd. It will be the second
I'm
part.
I'm falling asleep.
And then, no, listen, what we're going to do is, it's very easy.
This is important.
This is very important. We're going to start with Karen. You're going to talk about your favorite murder.
That's right.
Then we're going to go to unqualified deal breakers. Then we're going to take an advice call. After that, we'll end the show and then we'll come back next week. No, actually, we'll wait 5 minutes and then we'll start again. And this time you guys are hosting. And Georgia, you're going to start with your favorite murder.
Okay.
Then Anna will go with hers. And then we'll do one more call and we'll wrap it up.
I love it.
It's amazing.
Sounds good, right?
Can you go over that again a few more times?
This is the most, what's the word, like when things are planned that I've ever
really
experienced in a podcast.
Is it planned?
It's called planned. Most planned.
Well, we're trying. We'll see where it goes. I'm sure that we're going to go
off
the rails.
That's because you guys are wittier than we are. And we have to like plan shit out. And
we're not from Whittier.
Are you reading from
Okay, should we jump right in?
Let's,
Let's do your murder.
Yeah, let's do murder.
Yeah.
Okay. Just start. Just
go for it.
All right, guys. Well, this is in when I got the email, the highly detailed email about what how this was going to go. And it said my favorite murder. Like, I've already done most of my favorite true, you know, like my top 10. You know what I mean? We've burned through.
Yeah, you've done. Yeah,
a bunch. So but I realized there was one I haven't done.
Oh my God.
That I do. I've always been very fascinated by, and that's the BTK killer.
Oh my God. Heavy hitter.
So, this is, but we're doing shorter versions than we normally do, right? This is kind of a bit of a bacon. Condensed.
Mine's
we
not. Have other stuff
Becky?
What?
Do you not know what I'm talking about?
No, I do.
Oh.
I was like, how do I make a lame joke? Because I'm actually not a comedian at all.
Look at me. I'm not either.
For a second, I honestly thought, I was like, am I going to tell her about the worst man who's ever lived? This is so exciting.
Mine's not shorter. Is yours shorter?
I don't,
it isn't, but I was gonna...
I don't know that many details. Will you please?
Okay.
Yeah. This okay. is, I mean, I'm excited to hear about this.
And somebody just give me a wrap it up. If we need to, like, wrap
sure.
it up.
Sim does an amazing wrap
it up. I have
a
great
finger.
Wrap it up finger. I just do this.
Okay, good.
Wrap it up.
Okay, so this all started in Wichita, Kansas in January 15th, 1974. And it's bad, bad, bad. So 15-year-old Charlie Otero comes home from school and he sees that his garage door is open, which is weird. And he comes home to find the whole house a mess, but it's silent, which is insane because he has four other brothers and sisters. He's the oldest. Everyone else is younger than him. So he knows something is very wrong.
His house has never been quiet in his life.
Right. If there's five kids.
Yeah.
So he's walking around trying to figure out what's going on. And then he hears his sister yell, "Charlie, come quick. Mom and Dad are playing a bad trick on us." So he goes upstairs.
Oh, God. I'm getting chills.
Oh, Mom and Dad.
I haven't even gotten through the first paragraph yet. That's how bad this is.
I'm sad.
So he goes upstairs and he finds his brother and sister, Carmen and Danny, huddled together, holding each other in their room. And then he goes and checks the parents' room and he finds his father, Joseph Otero, who was 38, dead on the floor, bound and strangled to death. And his mother, Julie, who's 34, also bound and strangled to death, laying on the bed.
They're babies, 34, and you have four or five kids.
Yeah,
right?
Yeah.
That's crazy.
The 70s. That's how they did it back then.
Yeah, that's just that's, so.
Yeah. Oh God.
Just fill up that station wagon.
I'm hung up on the bound thing. Like, where are their arms and legs are tied?
He
in
was
front
a big,
of them.
He was a big hog tire. But
like
I'm not
skilled.
Sure specifically okay, on okay. this, but like okay. with this guy,
but you know what I mean? There's certain terminology that you use with like certain murder phrases and bound is definitely one of them.
Right. Yeah.
This guy was like on occasion.
I was going to say the same thing, like with the word, what's the word when you get all your intestines taken out? Embowelled.
Where yeah. Disemboweled.
Disemboweled, but that's not sexy.
Embowelled is when you have them all put back in.
That wasn't relevant. Go on.
Oh, okay. So this is where it's even worse. So he yells to tell his siblings to go find their other brother, Joseph Jr., and their sister, Josephine, and bring them to him, but they can't find them. And so they call the police. The police come, the kids get out of the house, and the police find Joey in a different bedroom, also bound and murdered. And then they search the whole house and they finally find Josephine and she's been murdered. She's hanging from a pipe in the basement. So there's no indication of forced entry. The phone line has been cut. Classic horror movie style.
1974. Yeah. That's what you do.
Yes. This for the scariest results possible. The family car's gone. And there's no clues. The killer's left nothing behind until, upon closer inspection, the police find that there is semen next to where Josephine's body was
the
in
mom?
The basement.
That the mom,
the little girl in the basement.
Oh no!
So, because they stole the family car. The first break they have is that a man, they finally find the car in a grocery store parking lot. And then they find a man who saw who was driving the car. But the only description they have of him is he's a white man with dark hair. So
it seems like to narrow it down, right?
Yeah, I mean, You've just gotten rid of all those blondes.
Yeah.
And all those fucking gingers everyone hates.
Listen, if you're on Mars and it's all green, little green men, then you're like, it's the one guy who's white and with dark hair. But unfortunately, yeah, you're in Wichita.
You're in Wichita, yeah. Kansas. Yeah. A lot of whites.
Yeah.
So why didn't the people at the Frosty Freeze, they should start to like clock like descriptives of every single mm-hmm. customer they have.
I do that now. Do you do that now? Now that we have this podcast, I'm like...
At our job at Frosty Freeze.
Yeah, listen, this podcast doesn't pay well. I do that now when I'm like, I see someone strange in my like apartment building and I'm like, button down fucking plaid shirt. And yeah, that's actually a description of my husband. But
I wave at everybody in our neighborhood like...
Oh, yeah.
Like, I'm just like, hi, I acknowledge you.
And then they're like, when was the last time you saw Anna? And they're like, well, she waved at me at 7:35 in the morning.
Like, don't you kill me.
You see me.
Yeah, yeah, that's right. Yeah.
See each other.
Yep, we got it.
I like those stories where a little kid who has some kind of autism spends a lot of his time writing down license plate numbers.
What?
And that kid then turns in his notebook and the cops end up finding somebody because he does that.
Never heard that.
Really?
That's amazing.
I've heard it on two different ones.
What I love is when a little kid is like, he looked like a lion. And then you're like, this might have been a movie. Then they're like,
oh, the movie,
like,
Lion?
You're so stupid, little kid. And then you see him and he's like got a lion beard and like, or he looked like a clown. And then it's like, he was a clown. Like when little kids say stupid shit and then it turns out that they're not stupid.
Yeah.
Like we don't have an imagination.
He really loves blue popsicles.
Right.
And you're like, who has a blue mouth?
Oh my God, it's Jimmy Blue Mouth.
Fucking Blue Mouth. At it again.
Oh, let's get back to the murder.
Okay, so now a year later, there's two brothers, the Sebring brothers in Wichita. They turn themselves in for these murders. They have records. The police search their house. The brothers say that they had an accomplice, that they killed the whole family. And that goes into the newspaper and on the news. So about 11 months later, the local paper in Wichita, I believe it's the Wichita Eagle, they get an anonymous call saying there's a letter in an applied engineering mechanics book at the Wichita Public Library that the police need to go take a look at. So they get the letter and it's from BTK.
Oh my God.
And it's before he gave himself his name, he said, those dude singular you have in custody are just talking to get publicity. They know nothing at all. And then the letter goes on to list in incredible detail exactly how the Otero family was killed, and down to specific knots that were used and bindings, and the fact that a radio was stolen from the house, which the cops hadn't noticed, and no one had noticed.
Whoa.
Until this letter, and then they went and checked it out, and it was true. So now they know that they're communicating with the man who killed this family.
Holy shit.
So the police decide to keep the letter out of the press, and they keep investigating. So 2 years later, in March 17th, 1977, a man knocks on the door of Shirley Vian's house. She's a 24-year-old mother of two. And the children answer the door and let him inside. And he takes the children, locks them in the bathroom, puts a door under the door handle. Then he strangles Shirley to death and binds her first, strangles her to death, and leaves. The children get out. They are able to describe the man to the police, and they say he's a large white man with carrying a big black bag. So 9 months after that, it's December 9th, 1977, and a caller calls the police dispatcher and gives them the address of Nancy Fox, who's 25 years old, and the police arrive at the address and find the body of Nancy tied up and strangled. And there's, again, semen found near the body. And the killer's voice is captured on tape when he called into the dispatcher. And so the police release this tape.
Wait, it was him who called in to get them to come to her body?
Yes.
What a creep. I mean,
so he calls,
he's a murderer.
So the police release the tape on TV, and they ask anyone who recognizes the voice to please come forward. No one does. No one knows who it is. Oh, so 2 months later, in February, there's a letter sent to KAKE-TV, that's right, Cake TV in Wichita, aww, claiming responsibility for the deaths of the Otero family, of Mrs. Vian and of Nancy Fox, as well as another unnamed victim. And the caller, the writer of the letter, demands to be called BTK for bind them, torture them, kill them.
Yeah.
Sort of a weird version of fuck, marry, kill, isn't it?
Yeah. Yeah. But it's more past tense as opposed to like future.
Do you think Burger King sued? That's not funny. That's in bad taste.
Georgia, I thought it was very funny.
No, thank you. But thank you.
Everyone supports you, Georgia.
Thank you. It's a supportive room.
The next day, the police chief named Richard LeBunion announces that a serial killer is at large in Wichita. His name is BTK, and he has threatened to strike again. So, of course, everyone loses their shit in Wichita. There is a rumor going around that this killer is targeting women with long hair. So almost all the women in Wichita, Kansas, cut their hair short. There's like a line.
I want to work at beauty cuts.
Right.
In 1977.
We'll just give you a nice Dorothy Hamill.
I'll be making bank.
Yeah. We'll curl the bangs under.
You want to work at
this part back.
Sheer bliss.
This is horrible. It's bad. A year later, in April 28th, 1979, a woman named... Anne Williams. Oh, no, I'm sorry. Anna. So.
Anna or Anna?
Oh, I think it's Anna Faris Williams.
Oh, God. Oh, God.
That's not cool. That's not cool.
I knew that I was living in some kind of weird purgatory.
But okay. This is it. This is all that happens is someone says your name.
I become a movie star. And
this is the best purgatory ever. Love it. Okay, so. This woman, Anna Williams, this is a crazy part of the story. She has square dancing one night. And so she's supposed to, when she goes home from work, she's home around 7. But that night she was square dancing, so she doesn't get home until after 10 o'clock.
She's sweaty and like full of joy.
She's been flirting with cowboys.
Square dancing, come on. Yeah.
There's not an more innocent hobby that you could have. No. Like it's like in a meet. Yeah.
So she gets home and notices that her bedroom door is open, and she knows for a fact that she shuts it every morning when she leaves her house. She picks up her phone to call the police, and the phone line is cut. So she runs to the neighbor's house.
Yes, girl.
And they call the police. The police go to her house and search her house, and they find a wire fashioned into the shape of a noose next to the bed. And in a previous communication, BTK had promised that he was going to hang his next victim. So Anna never went back to the house.
hey, we'll back it up. Keep her Anna, okay?
What a weird promise.
Yeah.
You know, like I pinky swear. Ugh.
So she never goes back to the house, but her daughter goes by to pick up the mail. Uh-uh. And they find a letter addressed to Anna's deceased husband, care of her, and it looks very official. But when they open it, they find a pair of her pantyhose inside and a drawing of what he had intended to do to her with a poem called, "Oh, Anna, Why Didn't You Appear?" So this 66-year-old woman who went square dancing instead of home didn't get killed by BTK because of that. So 7 years later, it's September 16th, 1986, and Vicky Weggerly, who's only 28 years old, is found by her husband when he comes home from work, strangled and near death. So he calls the paramedics. They come, they work on her, and they get her into the ambulance, and they get her to the hospital. The crime scene is completely compromised because they're all walking all over it, and she dies of her injuries. The police have no leads, and the case goes cold. So 30 years later, on the 30th anniversary of the BTK killings, the Wichita Eagle publishes a recap.
30 years later? Uh-huh. And no new murders?
Right.
I was on the Wichita police force, and I tell you what.
Did it eat you up inside?
I wrote for the Wichita Eagle, and 30 years later, I was like, how has this not been solved?
It goes forward in time, and you have one gray wisp of hair, like, right on the side of your bob.
It's real stylish.
That's how we know that 30 years have passed for you.
That's it, though, because I've had Botox ever since. Still.
So they publish a recap of what happened and the effect that it had on the city, and a couple days later, a letter arrives at the Wichita Eagle, and it contains a photocopy of Vicky Weggerly's driver's license and photos of her dead body posed. So it's the BTK, and he's letting the police know that he has not gone anywhere and he's not a part of history. And he begins to communicate with the police through statements in the newspaper and personal ads and through letters. And the police basically convince him to start sending them packages because they know that anything that they have from him, they can get. Now there's, you know, so much more forensic science that they can apply to all this because, you know, of course, back in the 70s, all they could do was collect stuff and put it in an envelope.
Lick that stamp, motherfucker.
Right.
And put it on the fucking envelope.
Exactly right. So they're trying to get him to do all that. At one point, he's actually caught on surveillance video in his black Jeep Cherokee dropping off a package to the police station.
What?
Because he's like, thinks he can never get caught. At one point, he asks the police if they can trace him through floppy disk. And the police say no.
No.
No, we don't know why you're telling
him. But the police are lying.
Yeah. No, I guess that.
This is my big reveal. The police were lying to him.
I'm sorry. Police are not allowed to lie by law.
Well, it turns out in this case.
Wait, what?
Yeah, you can. So,
that's
so they're
inadmissible.
Like, BTK, don't worry about a thing and go ahead and send us that floppy disk. Because his thinking was he had so many maps he wanted to show them and poems and things that he wanted to communicate to them. He didn't want to have to send it all individually. So he was like, I'm just going to throw it all into a floppy disk and send that over to you. And then you can have all my serial killer documents. And this they were like, sounds great. Do it right away.
AP English or some shit. I don't know what that means because I was never in AP English. But I bet.
Advanced placement
English. You couldn't do that.
No, you can't.
Yeah.
So they of course trace him on that and they find out that the person sending all of this is a man named Dennis Rader. He's a husband and a father of two. He's the city dog catcher. He's a church elder and he was a Boy Scout leader. So he was in the entire time hiding in plain sight in Wichita.
Oh my God. Any one of those seems like a serial killer job.
Yeah.
But like all together, you know, like a dog catcher.
Yeah. Well, do you remember that hometown that we had? We had somebody send us a letter and they were from Wichita. And the story they told was they had a dog that got out and the dog catcher lived in his neighborhood and the dog catcher took the dog and took him inside his house. And then he went down to get the dog and the dog catcher was like, no, you have fines that you have to pay and you can't have this dog back. And I'm going to take him into the pound tomorrow morning and all this stuff. The guy basically charged his neighbor and was like, I'll beat the shit out of you. Give me my dog back. And he got his dog back and went home. And then like a month later, it was revealed that that guy was BTK. So he basically almost got into a fist fight with a serial killer.
You started some shit.
Yeah. And he's like, give me my fucking dog.
That's amazing. Forgot about that.
So essentially, Dennis Rader confessed to all of the killings, and then he confessed to two cold cases that they didn't know were connected to the BTK, which one was a woman named Catherine Bright who was stabbed to death in her home. BTK was waiting inside her house when she got home. He didn't know that she would be with her brother, Kevin, who he then shot and thought was dead, then went and attacked Catherine. And then Kevin got up and tried to fight him again. And then he strangled him and thought he was dead again. And then he murdered Catherine and then turned around and Kevin's body was gone.
Kevin!
And Kevin had gotten up and fucking ran out of the house.
Fuck yeah, Kevin.
And called the police. So
can you imagine how scary that was? Like even for a serial killer to turn around and the body's gone?
Oh, dude. That's
like even for a serial killer.
For a serial killer. But even if you have no feelings at all, you're like, oh, shit.
Oh, shit.
Fuck. So he, on that case, that crime, he didn't clean up anything. He didn't do his normal stuff that he would do. He just, like, really quickly covered his tracks and ran out. So he was positive he was going to get caught on that murder, and he wasn't. And then the other one, this is bad. It was in 1985. He broke into the home of Maureen Hedge, who was one of his neighbors. And after her male guest left for the night, he snuck out of her closet, turned on her bedroom light. She sat up, he pounced on her and strangled her to death. And then he put her body in the trunk of his car. Oh no, sorry, the trunk of her own car, and drove to the Christ Lutheran Church, where he eventually became a church elder, and took pictures of her in various sexual bondage positions. He had all of these pictures in his house and all of the pictures of all of his victims in his house when they arrested him. They found all of these files in his garage. And so basically he entered guilty to all counts, all 10 murders, and he was given 10 consecutive life sentences. And he said in an early letter that he blamed his murders on what he called Factor X. He said he was a big serial killer aficionado himself, and he said that all serial killers had the same Factor X, from Jack the Ripper to the Son of Sam. And he said that basically Factor X was a demon, and he described it as something that controls his desire to kill. And he drew it in varying ways, sometimes as a frog and sometimes as a more traditional looking demon. And that's the basics for the BTK killer, everybody.
Okay, can we talk a little bit about the death penalty stuff? Why do serial killers some of them get a pass? Like, you shoot somebody, let's say, once by accident during when you're robbing a gas station. If you live in Kansas, you're going to get, like, the death penalty. Why the fuck does he, like, get a pass? He's serving...
Pled guilty, right?
I mean, I have no idea. We are the last people you should be asking these questions.
I'm ready to speculate.
We have no idea.
I could speculate. I'm the shit out of this, but it's all speculation. And I think it's because he made a deal that if he pled guilty, he wouldn't get put to death. Right? Most likely.
I don't know.
Because then you don't have to put the families through the trial.
Well, it also depends on state by state. Some places have the death penalty and some don't.
Amy, you could probably weigh in here.
I'm a actually federal prosecutor.
Holy shit.
Hey.
Why are you not getting in here?
Yeah, I don't know. I feel like a podcast called, like, my favorite narcotics distribution offense doesn't, like, really have
no,
have
I want to hear
same,
that.
Have the same ring. No, I don't actually do death penalty cases, luckily for me. So this isn't really something I can weigh in on, but certainly there's lots
we
of reasons.
Don't do
there's
any
lots of reasons
that.
Why somebody might not get the death penalty, between, like, whatever the statute is to a plea agreement, like you said, or also there could be, you know, they might have a petition. I mean, there's just there's a lot of different reasons.
Is it rare to get a death penalty case based on all the things you can do to avoid it, even to go to trial that way?
Yeah, you know, I mean, again, I do federal criminal law, so I don't
speculate again.
Come up a ton.
Speculation. This whole thing.
I have worked on some death penalty matters. There were habeas petitions at the Ninth Circuit, and they were pretty horrible, gruesome cases. I did not enjoy it, so I don't know how you guys.
I just,
like,
don't. You know what I'm saying? In, like,
do this every day.
Like,
I don't.
Like, and we, you know, we tend to be whatever. Okay, I don't mean to go off on my weird tangent.
Go off.
Like, why?
That's what this podcast is.
But truly, like, why? Like, it seems like, all right, if we're going to accept the death penalty, which I'm not in like favor of, just in general on an ethical basis. But if we're gonna do it as a nation. Seems like the BTK guy, well, you know, that seems like
top of the list.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
Well, a lot of the sentencing and that sort of thing doesn't really make a lot of sense. There's not a clear cut one where it's like, well, he did this, so this is going to happen, because historically this is how these people get charged.
I just wonder if, like, the gruesomeness of fascination, like, is adds this undercurrent of, like, do we weirdly, clearly, like, kind of appreciate the obsession and the oddness of mentality, and value that in a way that,
or we can learn from it in some way.
I mean, I think it's interesting. I definitely don't, like, value it or appreciate it. Like, it's, I don't
we
think
sort
that
of
the fascination is a positive.
No, not at all. Yeah. Of course not.
Yeah.
But, there is something different about, like, the fascination of mind of somebody like this, that, you know, whereas somebody else we're a little more dismissive of, like, yeah, Yeah, we'll inject you.
Well, I always think it was a really interesting decision, and maybe even we lost something in the fact that Ted Bundy was put to death, because I feel like there's so much the extreme of being a sociopath and psychotic. We could have learned so much about the human brain based on just interviews with Ted Bundy, not with people who could be tricked. You know what I mean? And like, so we put him to death, and it's like, well, we kind of put ourselves out of a learning experience in a way. I mean, he was going to stay in prison for the rest of his fucking life.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. So I mean, listen, I agree with you. My uncle lived across the street from him, by the way.
In Seattle?
Yeah.
Start over.
Yeah. No, that's all I know. It's just that he lived, my uncle lived right across the street where Ted Bundy lived he rented a room in an attic.
Is this the same uncle who made the guillotine that is on your front porch?
Yes, it is.
Holy shit. He sounds like a badass motherfucker.
He is. He's awesome. Uncle Roger.
Roger, get on the podcast.
So, okay, I'm sorry. I did not mean to go off.
No, not at all. No, because I was thinking about that. Like, it is Ted Bundy was interviewed a bunch at the end of his life. But I think people get so, it's like you murder almost 40 women. And after a while, people are just like, get rid of him. Like, mm-hmm. We don't care what he has to say anymore. It's not that idea of like him getting to have, which I also don't even know how I feel about the death penalty. I'm definitely not advocating for it, but I do see the mentality of people just being like, do you want to die tonight in this gorgeous home?
Again, that's a medicine. Guillotine. On the front porch.
This whole thing is going to turn into like some kind of game that Anna's playing with us.
We're like, oh, wouldn't that be magical?
She tried to kill us in all different ways.
My favorite murder is.
Oh, no.
Run.
But like Dennis, what I think is fascinating about Dennis Rader is he was... like when he was the dog catcher, they called it like the city. I can't remember the name of the term that was on the side of the van of this really good made for TV movie I watched, but he would do things like go around and measure people's lawns. And if your lawn was too high, he would like take a picture of it and like give people a warning. And there was a story in this movie, and I didn't have time to see if it was real because I didn't know how to fact check it, but I think they put it in based on something he really did, which is if somebody's dog got out, he would bring it to the pound and then tell the person they had to talk to him before the pound would release the dog to the person. And so he would say they have 5 days to contact him, and then he wouldn't answer his phone, and then the pound would kill the animal. He did that in this made for TV movie. He did that to one woman. And I remember hearing about other things like that. So it's like, this person who is taking these weird little, like, you know, those people that love control and love power, even though it's like the dog catcher power. Yeah.
So I could see that in a way where Ted Bundy would get off on being interviewed. And it's like, he's not really being punished. He doesn't give a shit about staying in prison the rest of his life because all these people want to know about him. So it's almost like, that motherfucker.
It's a really fucked up way to approach fame, isn't it? Like,
if you just want to be famous.
Put it mildly.
Yeah.
I was going to go through like two different avenues. I just knew when I was 8 that I just really wanted to be famous.
Quote, either, like, famous.
Acting or killer.
Or whatever else it takes.
This is whatever it takes.
Whatever. If killing doesn't work, then you go with acting.
I mean, they're very similar.
Who knew? Podcast.
Very similar.
But truly though, like the psychology, I guess, maybe this is what you're getting at, Karen, is the idea of like the idea that he clearly wanted desperately to be known.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, gave himself, you know.
Like, he's the reason he got caught. His own need for
his own ego.
That fame.
Yeah. Like even two people almost got put into prison because of who admitted to it. Like you should be like, great, I got off of it.
It would have been a lock.
Yeah.
That'd be the old double jeopardy thing we talk about, where if those people were prosecuted for his crimes, then he would have been innocent, and he couldn't let that happen because he wanted the credit.
My question is, a fucking applied engineer book at the library, you think people check that out enough that they're gonna find out, they're gonna find that letter that he wrote? Applied engineering?
No, I think he put it in just specifically for the cops. I don't think he stuck it there like forever.
But Okay.
He went and put it in and then called and said, it's in this book.
I thought he was just, because it was 11 months. I thought he was just waiting for some engineer student to go check this book out. And be like,
oh, smart people will get this. No.
Oh, yeah.
No, no. I think he just rolled on up to the library.
Listen,
I think George is totally right.
I don't know.
No, I think he was like, this is an obscure one, but maybe like
someday.
Yeah. Some lucky nerd who loves numbers.
This isn't a post secret book where they like hide people hide their real secrets. Listen, that was fucked up. I'm glad you did that one. I feel like we don't do like famous serial killers a lot, but they're so such interesting stories. Mm-hmm. Like Ted Bundy, it's like we wouldn't.
We have a lot.
That.
I grew up north of Seattle, and there's like, yeah, you guys know, you're nodding your
Pacific
heads.
Northwest.
Yeah, I know, it's something. Yeah,
you guys something got in the rain.
Yeah.
Uh-huh. loneliness depression,
rain.
Control, not enough people getting laid. Yeah. I don't know,
like, so many layers of clothing all the time.
Yes, that wool that scratches mm-hmm. on you.
Ugh.
Until you kill.
So do you remember a lot of this from when you were a kid?
Well, I remember we had the Green River Killer,
right?
Yeah.
Did you hear a lot about it?
Oh, yeah. It was like in the news all the time, like another body found. And then I heard a story that, I don't know, you guys might know more about this, but that apparently his coworkers at the gas or whatever, the car mechanic place that he worked at, would joke that they'd be like, dude's the Green River Killer.
No.
Cause he's so boring.
I think, you know what? There's the sense of creepiness that we're taught to ignore. Mm-hmm. And especially as women. And like, because we want to be polite, we want to be kind, but maybe somewhere in us, there's that little tug of like, oh yeah. That one,
yeah,
not surprising.
That might be a little creepy. Maybe you should avoid that.
The eyes are bad on that one. That's what I always think.
Ooh,
well, bad eyes.
Yeah. Well, and also it's that like overly nice creepy that you can't really explain. It's the same thing of when the guys who put girls. Who, when a girl puts you in the friend zone, they're like, you don't want a nice guy, and it's like, no, we don't want a creep who's being nice to us, not. I don't know where I'm going on
yeah,
this.
Yeah, like someone who has an agenda.
Agenda, that's
yeah,
the
yeah.
one.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah,
for sure.
Absolutely. Okay, Sim just passed me my note sheet here. Are we supposed to
Yeah, this is my
this?
Subtle like transition.
Okay.
This is a nice segue.
You used to be way better at segues. You
it's
did.
True,
he
true.
Said,
this
shut the
This is a very strange
people.
Show, by the way. This is a very strange segue. How do we go from that murder to relationship deal breakers?
I mean...
Serial killer. Relationship deal breaker.
Okay. Okay, so imagine you're single... Deal breakers. Ready? He calls spaghetti paschetti.
Nope.
Goodbye.
Bye.
He gets his balls professionally waxed every month.
Well, no. That's polite.
Shave them. Waxing is fucking, what's the word? It's torture.
Maybe he likes it though. It's part of it.
Shave them. It seems like there'd be an awful lot of cuts, no?
Everyone calm down and shave your balls.
Okay, great. He thinks OJ was framed.
Oh, that's...
You're like asking us to say yes to these questions. You're not...
Yeah.
No. Karen?
I mean, I feel like these days with all these documentaries come out, it's hard to know. You have to really stay neutral on a lot of things.
But so I love arguing.
You're going to still go out with this fella?
I mean,
that's fine.
If he's passionately yelling about it in my face constantly, then no.
Oh, then I'd
say
yes.
It can't be a singular passion.
I love nothing more than to argue loudly at a bar with people about something. I was yelling at Vince. We were talking about aliens at a bar, and he was like, I really don't like doing this. I was like, oh my God.
Wait, are you pro or con?
Aliens?
Yeah.
Well, it depends on what side I'm arguing.
Oh, I see.
But I'm pro.
You're just doing whatever. You're just arguing.
Yeah. I'm pro.
I like the idea that, you know, we're not like this singular, like a sort of abyss of loneliness. Just that there's other.
You doing okay over there? No. Yeah. No, it's not.
We're all together. We're all together
yeah.
now.
Yep. Yeah. Here we are.
Yep. There's other things out there. We got to believe it. Okay. During sex, he puts his finger up your butt.
Without asking?
Oh,
as a surprise?
We didn't clarify.
Yeah, without asking. I mean,
First time? Or are we talking like seventh time?
Let's say it's fourth time.
I need to be asked.
It's a weird ask.
It is a weird ask. Georgia, may I put my
no.
index finger up your anus?
No, I'm going to go pass on that.
Okay.
Karen's being real quiet on this one.
I'm just thinking. I'm thinking about stuff.
Fantasizing.
You know. Guys, it's all sensation. I feel like our culture really makes us feel bad about stuff.
I am so with you on that.
Yeah. So we know your answers.
Yeah. Two proud yeses or whatever.
Two not proud.
Okay, he eats placenta in a shake every morning.
Who's placenta?
Where does he get it? Yeah.
He's got a hookup, you know?
Lady
He's
got a guy? Placenta? Or I mean, not guy, like lady or animal?
Yeah, it's wolf placenta. So then,
oh,
yes.
That's fine, because then he's...
I'm going to go ahead and say a firm no on this one. There's take vitamins.
Yeah.
I don't think that's the way you have to do it.
So many vitamins out there.
Okay, guys, but you know, there's immortality involved.
Oh. Is there? But you can still get hit by a car even if you eat placenta. Yes or no?
Well,
I'm right.
Nope.
What?
Not if you eat it every day.
You jump right over that car.
You become immune to cars. That's amazing. Now I want to eat placenta every
That's
day.
That's it? Keep. I want more fucking
I know. That was fun.
That was fun.
So we're going to actually move on to an advice call right now.
All right.
We're going to call Katie, and she's in LA, and she's 25.
Oh, my God.
Hello.
Hey, Katie. It's Sim. How are you?
Hi. I'm good. How are you?
Here's Anna.
Hi, Katie.
Hi, Anna.
We have two really special guests here. We have Karen and Georgia from My Favorite Murder.
Hi.
Hi.
Shut the fuck up.
You shut up.
I was so
Do you know who they are? Oh, so I take it you know who they are.
Yeah, no, I literally only listen to like three podcasts, and one is Anna's and one is My Favorite Murder.
Hell
so yeah,
yeah,
I definitely know who you guys are.
Oh, hell yeah.
Who are we competing with?
Yeah. Who's the third?
Do you know My Brother, and
yeah.
Me with
oh,
the
yeah.
McElroy Brothers?
Travis is great. Yeah, of course.
Yeah, that's my third.
Excellent. Well, Katie, tell us why your boyfriend's coworker is making you feel uncomfortable.
Yeah. So just a little background. My boyfriend and I have been dating for 5.5 years. We've known each other since preschool. We're best friends, you know, the whole thing. I moved to LA in January for a job. He moved after me. We moved in together. He got a job also, which I was really excited about. I was kind of nervous about him moving with me. I didn't want there to be any resentment if he like hated LA or anything like that. So he eventually starts kind of, you know, making friends at work and going out with coworkers and things like that. And there's one guy that would just kind of make snide comments about like if my boyfriend and I already had plans, you know, to make dinner or something that night. And he was out with them at a bar, he would say, you know, okay, guys, I gotta, you know, head home. Like, Katie and I are having dinner together. And the guy would just kind of make these comments like, oh, yeah, I gotta get back and, like, make dinner for your girlfriend and blah, blah, like, or gotta, you know, you're whipped or whatever. Like, she's, like, I don't know, things like that. And he would make these comments in front of all of the guys that they hang out with. And then eventually he kind of started making them in front of me to me directly. So like, for example, one night we all went out to a bar for one of their birthdays and my boyfriend and I are going to leave. And the guy comes up to me and, you know, like hugs me goodbye. And he's like, you know, thank you so much for actually letting him come out with us tonight and stuff like that. It was like, what the fuck, dude? Like, I mean, and it's kind of one of those things where like in any other like friendship, if someone were, you know, ragging on me like that, someone that I actually knew, I'd be like, okay, well like fuck off, whatever. I don't care. But like, it's kind of a situation where I don't know this person and it's like a new coworker and I don't want to like jeopardize his friendships and things like that. And so I don't really know how to handle it, I guess is my question here.
Oh my God. I've seen thoughts.
I know. Let's go down the line.
No.
You guys go first. Well, what does your boyfriend say when you guys talk about it?
Yeah. So he's very non-confrontational. Like I would definitely say that I am the person to be like, fuck off. He's kind of the person to just ignore it and not pay attention to it. Not really like give it life, I guess you could say. So he's kind of the one that's just like, oh, haha.
Oh, I hate that so much. That makes me so angry.
Yeah, my husband's like that too.
Me too, because I'm definitely confrontational. I'm like, yeah, say something back.
Pepper
like,
spray that motherfucker.
Like,
that's my first thought. No.
Is he defending you at all?
I mean, I don't really know. I haven't been in front of that. Like, I mean, he didn't hear it whenever the guy said it to me personally. So
he laughs it off because he's afraid, like, oh, he's a professional connection. Then he'll laugh it off and he'll go back home and he'll just kind of take it. But inside, I'm sure it really hurts him and it hurts you. It's completely disrespectful. I hate this guy.
Right. I guess to me, like, because whenever we've kind of talked about it one-on-one here, he's just kind of like, well, if I don't feel like you're controlling or that I'm whipped or we have something wrong in our relationship, then why does it matter what this random guy thinks, I guess? Which I get, but at the same time, it's just kind of like, I don't know what to say to this dude, and I wish that I could have something to, like, give my boyfriend that's non-confrontational to, like, be like, hey, man, maybe, like, gently fuck off kind of thing. I don't know.
No, he has to say that. I would tell him to completely fuck off. That's what I would say, but
yeah,
I get it. He has a job, and it's his coworker.
Have you ever tried cupping his face in your hands and saying, who hurt you? You could do something like that, because it really does sound like a person who is either jealous of you, like kind of into your boyfriend. There's a lot of possibilities going on, but the idea that you would be actively trying to like pick on someone because they have a relationship is very, it's not a good sign for you as a person if that's something you feel the need to do. Mm-hmm. And I feel like there's something to be revealed in that guy. And maybe your boyfriend gets the sense that he's like one of those aggro dudes that he just doesn't want to like start anything with.
I bet this guy, the minute your boyfriend, and I want to say like, it bothers me that he's being called a friend and your boyfriend doesn't want to fuck with the friend and you don't want to ruin his friendship. That guy's not a friend. And the minute I bet your boyfriend, who absolutely should say something to him, says something, this kid will fucking start crying. Like, I bet he's so fragile. I don't think his feelings should be taken into consideration.
Don't we think that like somebody's like don't you think that he's loves her or like lusts after her or like is
either her or him.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
There's something,
but I think her
there's
I think
jealousy.
I think it's Katie. Like I think that the dude is like lusting after Katie.
No, I don't agree with any of you guys.
Really?
I really think that this guy is just an asshole.
Sam, I'm very fun and attractive. So.
Thank you, Katie. Like, I totally feel that from you.
I can hear it in your voice.
Sorry, Katie.
I feel like the minute though you put like this romantic spin on it and oh, he's listening, like then it's like he deserves some kind of kindness, which if he is in love with you and lusting after you, well, that's his fucking problem.
That's,
and he's
totally
showing
right.
it the wrong way.
Yes.
And
yeah,
that's just this whole thing. I feel like there needs to be a way to explain to your boyfriend how much this affects you, and the minute he needs to know that you're the person he should be defending, not this fucking douchebag.
That
would bother me a lot.
Also, that kind of that young dude thing of like, oh, you're whipped or you go home and eat dinner together, therefore that's a bad thing.
Right.
It's indicative of a mindset that isn't healthy and isn't good. Like that, those are those kinds of guys who are like, women do this to men or whatever. And he's so comfortable saying it and quote unquote joking about it. That's another thing that I don't know. Anytime I'm around guys that are like that, where I just am like, I just want to get away from that person. Like maybe that's not to defend the boyfriend so much, but maybe he's just getting a sense of like, this isn't one of those guys you want to get on the bad side of. And so it's putting him in this weird position.
I was with a guy a long time ago in my early 20s. And his best friend told him, he's like, oh, you're so pussy whipped. And then the dude told me that the best friend said that. And I had such complicated feelings because it was like, well, what are you trying to get out of me that you would tell me that? And also, what the fuck is this dude? Maybe I don't know. It's you're right, Karen, though. It's that way of communicating that feels really youthful.
Yeah.
That and also and manipulative and weird and filled
and
with envy. Yeah. And like envy and angry. Yeah.
Yeah. Because it's also that thing of like, oh, I'm joking. Yeah. You're like hiding behind a joke. But
yeah,
you're
taking it too seriously.
That kind of thing. But you're actually just sending a real message, which is let him do what he wants and fuck off.
Katie, I hate to say it, but I don't mean to, like, I don't want to diminish your relationship at all, because maybe you're so crazy about your boyfriend that you want to marry him and be with him forever or whatever. But I think that the fact that there's a little bit of a bro before hoe culture happening here.
Can I say something?
That's not safe for you.
Something I noticed too, like way in the beginning, that that might be connected, is when you said that he moved here for you, and you would feel bad if he wasn't happy here, and so you don't want to get in the way. It's not your responsibility to make sure that a decision he made is then, you know, it's not on you for him to be happy. So you being annoyed that this person he works with, who's not even his friend, like gets upset with him, isn't your responsibility, in the same way that him finding a life and being happy here after he made a decision to move here, it's not your responsibility either, which is a hard thing to, I can't deal with that at all. I'm learning it in therapy, but like, it's just, none of that is your responsibility. You have yourself to worry about.
Yeah. Yeah. We have to start.
Yeah. Very true.
Thinking a little bit more individually. Like collectively as women. And I was going to say a little more like men, but that also feels like we're handing over power there. But I think in general, don't you guys think that like it's important to impart on, because for years I would think about just how my identity through men.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And I think it's important to sort of explore the idea of like, let's not fucking do that anymore. Let's think about ourselves. Let's be selfish. You know, as my mom always said, be selfish in love.
It's not
never
even
listened.
Selfish. It's just like,
but
caring,
an idea.
Self-care. Yeah. Selfish is a good word for it.
Well, but because I think we have to redefine everything, right, like as a gender.
Yeah. I also wonder if you've discussed it in this way. If you had this group of girlfriends that you were going out with, and there was one that was giving him shit about hanging around and like, why don't you leave her alone? And how would he feel if it was going back the other way? And not even like a demand of answer me right now, but think of what this would be like if this exact situation was flipped and it was happening to you. Just put yourself in my shoes. Cause I also think there's that thing of, you know, they say that like when there's a problem, guys freak out and they want to fix it. They don't, you know, they just, it's like, he doesn't know how to fix it and it's a work thing and it's like very problematic. So his solution is just don't let this be a problem to you. But really, I think what he needs to think about is you, like we're saying, and how it affects you, and how would it feel to him if there was somebody kind of letting him know that he wasn't welcome and that he's a bummer, but you know, that right. That like your friends think he's a bummer. That's so shitty.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, I feel like I definitely know how that situation would go, because like I said, I don't care about telling people to fuck off or whatever. But I haven't really presented the idea to him like that, like reverse, like said to him specifically, you know, if this were happening to you, I would have your back, kind of thing.
Yeah.
So yeah, that might be an interesting.
It'll be a revealing test, like with your boyfriend a little bit, like how he sort of absorbs if you can be honest with him about all of this. And really like have a long conversation about it. It'll be a revealing test for how he respects you and you respect yourself and you respect the relationship.
Yeah, because there's like the first thing I was thinking of is the fear that this guy is voicing something that your boyfriend might not be able to say. And that I think might be where the pain is coming from. Mm-hmm. And so it'd be like, if this guy stops talking, then that means that whole idea is gone. But really that fear is just like, is this actually an issue here? Is this, you know, do you need, is it, are you unable to talk about that you want to spend less time together? So it's now we're introducing somebody that's introducing the idea so that he's not a part of it. And I obviously don't know you and don't know anything about it, but that's, I always think about that when I, in relationships, focus on things that later on I realize I was just focusing on something else because I didn't want to like put my hands on what the real problem was.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, no, I mean, I've never really considered that, but that would make a lot of sense. I also have like a lot of, like I really try very hard not to be, like controlling in any way or anything like that. I mean, I don't feel like I really am anyway, but I do make it a point, just because like his last girlfriend was kind of like just fucking nuts and would like not even let him hang out with guys alone or anything like that. Like would have to just be present like with him all the time if he was going to be doing anything social.
Just remember that that's what he presented to you. Like if you talked to her and heard her side of the story, that sure, might not yeah. be true. And like true. You don't have to be the chill girl. Like I feel like we all try so hard to be like, I don't care. I'm so fucking chill.
Totally.
You know? And you're allowed to have your emotions. And one of those emotions sometimes is piss the
Watch
fuck off.
Watch a ton of
off.
Porn.
Yeah, I love porn.
Oh no, I'm definitely crazy. Like I'm definitely a crazy girl also. And he knows that full on.
But then sometimes it's also like, I think a good way to approach an issue that you have instead of, you know, being pissed off is to go, my feelings are really hurt by this thing and here's why. And someone can't get, I feel like if you, someone gets mad at you for saying, I have really hurt feelings and this makes me really sad and they get mad at you for it, that's not on you.
Yeah. And Katie, you know, yeah, don't be afraid of the future. You're young.
Yeah.
You're in LA. There's a lot of amazing people out there. Don't feel afraid to like feel your independence if not everything, if things aren't right. I made that mistake, I think, a little bit, like feeling like I'm checking my relationship off the list. And if that would be the final advice that I could give you would be like, know your worth, know your independence, know that you're young and there's so many people out there. There's so much life experience. I hope you get to live it all and experience a whole lot of people. And life is too short for you to be in relationships where you're not feeling like this isn't fully right, or somebody doesn't have your back, or somebody doesn't value you in every way. Because I view this as a bigger problem with you and your boyfriend than anything else. And so please take that and hopefully, I don't know, that's at the...
Katie, are you good with this advice?
Yeah, I guess.
I mean, do you know what I'm saying though? Like have intimate conversations.
I also just was curious, like, I don't know how to, if this guy, the coworker, were to say something to me again in person, I guess I'm just confused about how to.
What did he say to you in person?
He was like, oh, thanks so much for letting like your boyfriend come out tonight. Like,
and your boyfriend didn't say anything to him.
He didn't hear him. He literally said it like in my ear as he was hugging me.
It sounds like he's hitting on you, but it also sounds like if your boyfriend doesn't understand, like if you can't be honest with him and have like, because listen, like shit, tons of people are gonna hit on you, Katie. We live in fucking LA. It's gonna happen all the time. But the bigger thing, in my opinion, is the relationship with your boyfriend. And if he isn't. If he isn't fully empathetic, then that's something that's on you. Then you need to examine: do I want to spend time? Do I want to invest time in this relationship?
And a knee to the nuts in the meantime is a great fucking way to shut someone up. You know what I'm saying?
but I hope that you know that, like the coworker, truly aside, yeah, he's a creep and he wants to fuck you. But there's going to be a gazillion of those experiences that you'll have throughout the years here. I just think that the bigger question is the relationship with your boyfriend. And that's my very strong opinion. And I'm very unqualified to do any of this.
Hey.
Katie, thank you so much for hanging out with us tonight.
Yeah, Katie, will you give
thank
us an update?
Thank you so much. Stay sexy, don't get murdered, and fuck you, Sim.
Yay, fuck you, Sim.
All right, thanks.
Stay sexy.
Bye, bye guys.
Bye.
All right, that's going to end part one. So next week, we have part two where Anna will start off with your favorite murder, and then... Georgia, we have yours.
I have
to end
it.
We have one more call, and then let's take a little break. We'll be right back. Or next week.
Bye.
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 Bye.